The MadTech Podcast Special, focusing on the most important topics in AdTech and MarTech.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Big Exchange Wire MadTech Podcast Special. I'm Matt Broughton, Research Lead, and today we're going to be examining the Digital Markets Act and its potential implications for the advertising technology industry. To join us, I'm delighted to be joined by Damian Jeredan, founding partner of Jeredan Partners. Hello to you, Damian.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you. And also joining us is Ciarán O'Kane, President and CSO of Exchangefire. Hello to you, Ciarán.
Hello, Matt. Hello, Damian. Is it Damian?
Damian, yes, that's fine.
Yeah, good stuff. Great to be here.
Absolute pleasure to have you. And I'm sure we're going to have a very, very calm and measured conversation about all the big tech implications of new legal laws. But yes, really looking forward to this one. So we'll dive straight in. The Digital Markets Act, specifically designed to curb potentially monopolistic activity by these massively scaled online platforms termed in the legislation as gatekeepers. How will the Digital Markets Act directly impact the ad tech industry? Damian, let's start with you.
Yeah, so I think it's important to give a little bit of background when it comes to the DMA. So the DMA came about in response to the perceived lack of effectiveness of antitrust laws in the European Union. As you know, the European Union has been extremely active in terms of challenging big tech companies. Historically, on the basis of antitrust laws, we call competition laws in the European Union, but there were three downsides to using competition law to challenge these companies. The first one is that these cases take a long time because they're complicated. And if you look, for example, at Google Shopping or Google Android, they lasted, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And of course, this is problematic in an industry which moves fast and where the market can tip at some stage. The second thing is that the remedies were often not very effective because either they came too late or they were too narrow. And so although we've had these investigations for many years with companies like Google being condemned multiple times, it didn't really move the needle. And finally, the third criticism was that these actions were very narrow because of the burden of proof. For the regulator, they tend to focus on one particular aspect of a sector. And for example, if you look at the shopping case, it focused on comparison shopping services, which is a very small area of economic activity, instead of looking at a much broader, field, which could have been, you know, all the verticals competing with Google, but Commission decided not to do that. So they decided to go for a new instrument whereby a number of companies would be designated as gatekeepers, provided they meet the thresholds. And once they're designated, they have to comply with a number of obligations, which are found in Article 5, 6, and 7 of the DMA. And a deadline was set for them to comply. It was 7 March, just 3 weeks ago. And in case of non-compliance, then the Commission could intervene quickly. They could launch proceedings, which would last a maximum of 12 months. So this is the response to the problems of the past in that the DMA is quite exhaustive. Instead of focusing on one thing in particular, it deals with a wide range of issues. And then to the extent that there are proceedings for non-compliance, they're much quicker. It's 12 months max. In terms of penalties as well, you know, the Commission can impose fines, and in case of repeated infringement, the fines can become very high, but they can also impose structural remedies like divestments, for example. So, you know, that's basically the approach that has been pursued. By the way, the UK is pursuing the same path. Australia is pursuing the same path. South Africa is looking into it. India is looking into it. In the United States, things are a little bit more challenging for various reasons. But, you know, this sort of ex ante regulation has become quite popular to deal with the challenges from big tech.
Absolutely. That's really, really useful context. So, Kieran, how that wider scope and, you know, potentially more far-reaching investigations and actions, how can that, you know, specifically impact the ad tech industry and, you know, the issues we have been facing as an industry over the past decade or more?
I don't think we've sort of even scratched the surface on what the commission will do in terms of investigations. And that was a good sort of overview there from Damien regarding the DMA. Like, I was thinking about this. It's the gatekeeper designation which puts a lot of the companies in the crosshairs, right? And how they sort of how they act in a commercial way will probably trigger a lot of these investigations. I am curious. I don't know enough about the powers that the commission has in terms of the DMA that they can push these things. But it seems to me that, just going back to what Damien said, I think the DMA is a product of that sort of, like, I mean, the lack of urgency from these big platforms. They haven't, you know, they're comfortable paying these big fines and just getting on with it. And I think the EU has had enough of it, right? And it's funny, I see all these, asshole would be a nice word, but, like, you know, Americans saying that Europe is taxing innovation and, you know, they can't build these companies, so they want to make money off the back of them. And you sit there thinking, you know, I think that these monopolies have become so big that they wield so much political power in terms of, like, lobbying and all the rest of it, that they kind of almost neutered the ability of governments to sort of regulate them. Like, regulation isn't a bad thing, right? Like, the oil companies in the US that had a monopoly over, you know, oil production and oil distribution in the US were broken up by Woodrow Wilson because he felt that that would be a good thing for the economy, and it was. Likewise, the AT&T breakup as well, which government did. We're trading on different rules now, right? You have to sort of bring legislation in that sort of fits the times. And they feel that, you know, how do you even start to kind of, like, build a operating system for a mobile or a mobile company when Apple and Google have such a stranglehold over the space? And likewise, Spotify is a rare example of a company that's kind of broken through and done really well. But even then, it has to pay, like, this taxation to sell its product on Apple and Google's sort of platform, while Apple offers a similar service for next to nothing, right? So, you know, I think the DMA is a necessary, just going back to Damien's point, I think the DMA is a necessary sort of rules to play by in the space. And I don't buy into what the American observers are saying about this. I think it's necessary for the ecosystem.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I also think that the DMA is only one piece of the puzzle, especially when it comes to ad tech. I think the DMA is actually not focusing very much on ad tech. It focuses more on other sectors and other issues. Of course, it may have implications for ad tech, especially in terms of transparency. Okay, but I think that if you want change in ad tech, it will come from a combination of different things. And I can explain if you want me to. I think that, first of all, competition law, antitrust, still has to play an important role and will play an important role. We are in a situation where Google has been found guilty of abuse of a dominant position by the French Competition Authority in 2021. I was representing the complainants in that case. And now that we have that decision in the pocket, we filed two class actions, one in the UK, the other one in the Netherlands. In the UK for £13 billion, in the Netherlands for £2.1 billion euros. But the Google is also investigated by the European Commission, by the Competition and Markets Authority. And as you know, there are three lawsuits pending in the United States, with the DOJ lawsuit going live, I think, in September of this year.
Yeah, big ad tech case, the DOJ ad tech case in September. Yeah, and it's a jury trial as well, which is interesting.
The jury trial, and I've done many cases in my life, but I think this is one of the strongest cases I've seen, simply because the amount of evidence is overwhelming. And so I really expect the EC case and the DOJ case to deliver. And what they could deliver would be something very different from what we've seen. We all know that fines are pretty much useless because these companies have so much cash in hand that it doesn't really matter, right? But what the European Commission is looking into, the CMA might look into, and the DOJ is also looking into, are structural remedies, which means a breakup. And, you know, for me, the most logical breakup would be that Google would have to divest GAM.
It could, yeah,
it's DSPs, fine, but would have to divest GAM. If Google has to do that, well, then the narrative becomes quite different. Right. So I think that there's still a big role to play in antitrust. And I'm quite confident about these cases, if only because at least on the European side, I'm involved in these cases. And I think the evidence is absolutely overwhelming. And so that would be, I think, the most important piece of the puzzle. As you know, the GDPR, which is a regulation I don't like very much for all sorts of reasons. One is that it's incomprehensible, and two, I think it's badly enforced, can play a role too. And there are lots of, you know, investigations as well on that front, and some lawsuits as well. The privacy sandbox of Google is investigated by the CMA, and I think a number of agencies are also looking into it. It's been delayed several times, and I don't know whether it's going to come about this year. We'll see. And then you have the DMA, which is also adding a few important elements, but I don't think this will be the major piece of the puzzles. And then finally, I still believe that at some stage there will be a specific regulation dealing with ad tech. Okay. A bill was proposed in the United States, I think last year, a couple of years ago. It didn't go through for all sorts of reasons. And in the European Union, I think that at some stage, we will need to have a regulation, you know, dealing with ad tech markets, a bit like financial markets. At the end of the day, you know, these markets don't look very different. You've got buyers, you've got sellers, you've got an exchange in the middle. And it's actually quite extraordinary that ad tech has been able to go for, you know, 15 years without any sort of regulation preventing conflicts of interest. So I think eventually regulators will go in that direction. So if you look at all of that, okay, multiple investigations by antitrust authorities, lawsuit in the US, class actions, DMA, plus potential litigation, I think that, you know, Google might have to do something about its business in due time. I think at the moment, they're trying to hold as much as they can, right? Because there's no point making concessions before a big trial. But if the US trial didn't go their way, and if the European Commission adopts a decision with structural remedies, we might see quite a bit of action in the space.
Yeah, the GAM thing's interesting. I'm wondering if they will do. Will Google do the math in this and wonder and think about, do we really want to go through a jury trial and then the judge passes down a sentence or a suggestion in terms of like what they need to do, or will they go and do a sacrificial lamb? The problem is, though, Google make $31.5 billion from their network business, right, which includes GAM, AdSense, and AdMob, right, the mobile ad network they have. And most of that demand comes from their search business, which is $175 billion. So they're making so much margin on that business that they want to hold on to some of that. My sense is the European Union need to kind of get Google completely out of the sell side, right? Get rid of GAM, get them to sell AdSense, get them to spin off AdMob. Because if you leave them in there, they may have, they'll have an opportunity to keep doing what they're doing. The other problem is that they've almost set Chrome up to be the next sort of generation GAM in terms mm-hmm. of, like, they're building an SSP and almost an ad server into the Chrome browser, which the regulators need to be looking at, because, oh yeah, we'll give up GAM, but we just have another stack over here, which we're going to do the same stuff over and over again.
And I think regulators are aware of that. That if they give away GAM, it's one thing, but if they're rebuilding the GAM functionalities in Chrome, you know, it's not going to be a progress, right?
This is what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you look at the PAPI auctions, it's based on the same ideas with some degree of self-preferencing and so on. So, yeah, I think that, you know, we need to do two things. I think structural remedies are important, but you want to avoid Google circumventing them by, moving functionalities to Chrome, which is indeed exactly what they're doing. And I think that's the difficulty, you know, is that Google is extremely agile. It's a large company, but they're very agile. And over the years, they've always come up with something new, right? Saying, oh, it's going to be much better for competition, for consumer, for publishers, for advertisers. And at the end of the day, it's just even worse than the previous iterations of their operations. So I'm not very hopeful that, even if they have to divest GAM, that will be the end of it. Unless we do something about the privacy sandbox.
Yeah, I think the CMA, I'm just trying to think about this a couple of steps ahead, right? The CMA could force Google's hand in the sense that they won't allow them to be the arbiter in terms of these auctions, right, within Chrome, right? Yeah. So that's one way they stop it. And then the EU and the DOJ make them spin out GAM. That will actually nullify their power in that sense. They're not able to, because I can see what they're doing. They're trying to basically replace like for like, effectively. Yeah. One thing goes, but then if you move the auction into Chrome, which is like 60-odd% of the internet, browser activity, I feel we're at this sort of inflection point, though, Damien, and I think things are about to change.
Yeah, I agree. And I think at the end of the day, you know, the network business doesn't matter very much for Google anymore.
No, it's a decreasing business. Like,
you know, that they need some inventory from the open web to satisfy, you know, advertisers. But if you look at what they've done with Google Ads and DV360, I mean, they've been shifting their stuff to their own and operated companies, right? I believe the network business has already gone in many ways. Had they to dive as GAM, it wouldn't matter that much because, you know, at the end of the day, on GAM, they just make commissions on their own properties. They make 100 cents to the dollar. And this is where they spend their demand increasingly. If you look at the data, right? I mean, a lot of the demand is going to YouTube and is going to, you know, their own properties, much more so than in the past. So I think they've already anticipated that. So I think they will still need to be present on the open web, right, to some extent, but not to a great extent. And Chrome is large enough with 60% of the market to deliver what they need.
Interesting. And in terms of how, obviously we've discussed in terms of how, you know, the DMA is almost, you know, part of the bigger picture in terms of that legislative play. And obviously we've got the lawsuits in the US. Will Google and the other labeled gatekeepers, would they, you know, potentially have almost two tiers of services within, you know, across the US and EU, depending on that? Or will they, you know, look at it as in the sense that, you know, there's global action against them, they can't have those kind of two tiers of services?
Yeah, I think having different tiers of services is complicated in a business that is effectively global, right? I don't think it stops in any jurisdiction. Now, the DMA is not very demanding when it comes to ad tech. I think it demands more transparency, and I suppose that they can deliver in the European Union, right? I mean, to the extent they have to share files with data, they can do. And there will be a dispute about what exactly they share, at which frequency, and whether that will be convenient. I mean, obviously, if they share, you know, crappy Excel files every quarter, it won't make a difference for everyone. If they have, if they deliver APIs that allow, you know, publishers and advertisers to have a, you know, sort of, you know, real time insight into what they do, that could make a difference. Then there is Article 5.2, which will force them to obtain consent if they want to commingle data from different services. Well, consent they can always obtain, you know, like all businesses, they just make your life miserable and then you consent, and that's it. So I think that they can certainly deliver that. That's not one of the big areas of contention in the DMA. I think when it comes to Google, certainly their hotspots, like, for example, the Play Store, right, and the commissions they charge and everything else, that's a hotspot. Search is a hotspot and it will always be a hotspot because there are still many people who are not happy with what they do. And I think the commission will prioritize these, as we can see already, okay, because they've already opened five investigations and they tend to focus on these things as far as Google is concerned. They might be things that relate to ad tech, but it's not number one priorities for the commission. Now, there is something quite funny with the DMA that few people know, is that the DMA is a regulation, a European regulation. And European regulations, they have one interesting feature, is that they have so-called direct effect, which means that if you're a business user, you can sue Google in any court. Well, not any court, in any member of the European Union to exercise your rights under the DMA.
Sorry, so hold on. That's interesting. So any business user, B2B user of those platforms could actually take a case against Google in an EU member country?
Yes. And in fact, you know, that will happen. And I already have some clients that are sort of, you know, inquiring about this option. So basically, let's assume that you think that Article X of the DMA has not been properly implemented. I think the first port of call is to go to the European Commission and say, hey, you know, this has not been properly implemented. Now, you know, the European Commission has limited resources. They don't have 1,000 officials to deal with this. They have about 150. And so they've already set some priorities. Five investigations, formal investigation, plus two informal investigations. That will keep them very busy for a while. Mm. Okay. Now, you're impatient. You say, okay, I don't want to wait my turn. So what I can do is that I can sue Google before a court, and which court depends on the judicial structure of the member states, right? In some countries, it might be a civil court or business court or administrative court. And you go there and tell the judge, hey, you know, I have some rights under the DMA, and Google has some obligations. They have failed to comply with the DMA, and therefore I want you to find them in breach of the DMA and give me relief.
How, Okay, what does that look like then? So do you need to be registered in an EU country effectively? You need to be an EU business.
Yep. Or
and you go to a court, a friendly court, and you say my business has been affected by someone who's breaching sort of gatekeeper regulations. I want immediate remedy. What does that look like?
And well, then I think, you know, one area that will need to be investigated is what is a good court. Okay. Mm-hmm. There are 27 member states. Okay. So there are 27 options. And I think you will, first of all, I mean, there are a number of things that matter if you litigate. One is whether you have standing. The second is whether the courts are reliable. Third is whether they're quick. Fourth is whether you can obtain an injunction, okay, so that it goes fast, and so on, right? And I suppose that depending on these things and what sort of relief you're looking for, you might pick one court in a given jurisdiction, okay? Now, again, I think that ideally you want a serious court, okay? And some member states are better equipped than others, and you want a quick court, okay? Now, of course, one criticism that has been made about private actions in that space is to say, well, that will create fragmentation, because you could have a court in Portugal that will decide things very differently than a court in Finland, okay? That being said, the risk is limited for two reasons. The first one is that the European Commission will likely intervene in these cases by filing an amicus curiae saying, this is the way I see the law, and you know, if I were you, this is the way I would apply it. And second is that there's a mechanism in the European Union that allows courts to raise questions with the Court of Justice, which is, you know, our Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And so I think that there will be mechanisms that will ensure a certain degree of consistency, although because there's no case law in practice, that will be quite rough in the beginning. So we could have some funny actions, in the next few months or years. I can see litigants going to court over money-related issues, like, for example, what is a friend rate? Okay, that's the sort of things that regulators don't want to deal with, because, you know, saying, oh, the rate should be 14% and not 27% is not something they want to do. But this is the sort of things that courts do on a regular basis, like in IP, for example, right? Or in contracts. And so I think that while the Commission will focus more on structural issues and issues of principle, right, we could see the courts focusing on sort of more number-related matters in case of...
Can I give you a hypothetical then, right?
Sure.
Let's just say that YouTube's a good example, right? Designated gatekeeper.
Yeah.
But the only way to buy across probably... a market worth 15, 20 billion, well, not in Europe, probably 10 billion in Europe, is via DV360, right? And it's owned and operated by Google, right? If a DSP wanted to say, I feel my business is being affected, which it is, because I cannot get access to YouTube via my DSP, I want to take an action against Google in that sense. What's the process there like? Would they come to someone like you to kind of like put that case together, then go to a court? And would the action be immediate, or would it be like a fairly sort of drawn out sort of 2-year, 3-year process?
Well, I think that, first of all, it depends whether the issue is covered by the DMA or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the scenario you raised would fall under the DMA. But assuming for a moment it does, okay? Assuming it does, okay? Well, then I suppose, yeah, you could go to court, identify the right court, and then ask immediate relief in the form of an injunction. But typically, you know, the threshold is quite high. You have to show that you have a prima facie case, plus that waiting for, you know, the whole procedure to take place would create, you know, irreparable damages, which is a high threshold to meet. If you don't, if you cannot seek an injunction, or if you don't obtain it for that reason, well, then the procedure might last, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years, depending on the court and the speed of the court. Some courts are faster than others, right? I mean, Italy is known as being very slow. Some other countries are known to be faster. And I think you would have to analyze what's the best venue for your case.
It amazes me how much more open the kind of process around the DMA is relative to, obviously, legislation in the past, such as GDPR. Has it just been a case of European legislators and regulators have realized, hang on, this, you know, the one-stop shop approach, each individual data privacy regulator taking charge of, you know, where it's based within the EU. Is this basically an admission from them that that approach hasn't worked out?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I said that the DMA came about in response to the perceived ineffectiveness of competition law, but it's also in response to the perceived ineffectiveness of the GDPR. Because I think the European Commission, you know, avoided two mistakes that were made with the GDPR. The first one is that the GDPR applies to everyone, which doesn't make very much sense, right? I mean, I've got a boutique law firm with 25 lawyers. The GDPR applies to me, okay? To the same extent, it applies to Google. And the crazy thing with the GDPR is that I think it has imposed greater constraints on small businesses than on large ones. And a case can be made that Apple and Google and others have actually taken advantage of the GDPR because, you know, they've been saying, oh, because of the GDPR, I can't do that, right? I mean, I cannot provide you these data because of the GDPR. So they've been quite clever about it. So first lesson learned, focus on the big guys and don't bother the small guys, okay? Second lesson learned, the one-stop shop was crazy because that means that most actions have to take place in Ireland, of all places, with two effects. The first one is that the Irish Data Protection Authority is flooded with complaints, and Ireland is a small country, and obviously they have limited administrative resources. On top of that, to be honest, Ireland is a perfectly fine country, but they make a lot of money with the gatekeeper. So it might not be the best place to have disputes settled in Ireland. Okay. So they didn't want to any of that. So they said with the DMA, we focus on the big guys, the gatekeepers, basically. And then enforcement will be centralized with the European Commission. Except, of course, the possibility to go to court, okay, which is always a right that citizens have in order to enforce a regulation. So I think in terms of enforcement, we're in a much better position with the DMA than with the GDPR. Now, I should say that I'm a little bit dismayed by the negative comments that are made by some people saying the DMA is useless. It won't make any difference. Nobody's going to crack Google and Apple. Okay, the DMA has limitations as all regulations. Okay. Secondly, we live in democracy and the rule of law. So, of course, in terms of enforcement, China can be faster and stricter. But, you know, we have things like the right of defense, and we need to stick with that. So, obviously, you know, investigations will take time and there will be rights of defense and there will be appeals because that's the core of our system. But it is way too early to dismiss the DMA, as some people have done. On the other extreme, some have said the DMA will be the end of the world. Okay? Well, that's ridiculous. And to be honest, I think some of the gatekeepers, not all of them, but some of the gatekeepers have been plainly silly in the way they have lobbied against the DMA. I mean, some of them commissioned studies saying that if the DMA was adopted, Europe would go to the back to the Stone Age, right? I mean, that sort of argument will never succeed. Rightly so. Some gatekeepers like Microsoft have taken a slightly more intelligent approach, which is to say, okay, well, you know, the DMA is tricky and it will have implications, but we'll do our best to deal with it. And to me, that's always been a more fruitful approach than being extremely negative about it, because look, it's a regulation. It was to be adopted. It's been adopted. It will be enforced. And instead of, you know, saying it's all evil and it will create disaster, why don't you get on with it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think in terms of, you know, looking forward, obviously, you know, previous criticisms about regulations that they have been slow to adopt. Say if, for example, you know, things came to a head in four or so years' time, these gatekeepers had been forced to divest some assets, but other gatekeepers had arisen. What's the kind of process for reviewing the gatekeepers, and how quickly would that process be instigated by the regulators to react to markets? Obviously, the likes of OpenAI within the generative AI ecosystem, we don't know how that's going to turn out yet, and how would that potentially be legislated going forward?
Yeah, so that's obviously the challenge with the tech industry, is that you need to take decisions at a time where things are not settled yet, right? And the European Commission has a very large legislative agenda with the AI Act, the Data Act. And I think that the European Commission is trying to do its best, but obviously they will make mistakes. Some of these regulations will be misguided to some extent, and they will need to be reframed at some stage to take lessons from the past. Now, the GDPR is an example of a legislation which should be reframed, in my view, because it's been it's not been terribly effective, okay? But still, we're not seeing any remodeling of the GDPR to learn from the lessons of the past few years, and that worries me. That being said, I've rarely seen a piece of regulation where the European Commission was so motivated to enforce. And look, the deadline for being compliant was the 7th of March. It took them 2 weeks to open 5 proceedings, formal proceedings and 2 informal proceedings. So I think they really mean business. And I think they mean business because they realize that they are at the end of the rope. Okay? If antitrust doesn't work and the DMA doesn't work, what's left?
Yeah, complete control. I mean, look, monopolies are bad. They're not, it's not to do with capitalism. It's about cronyism, right? It's like they control everything. Like, you know, Google goes lateral into other verticals, like, so, you know, using their power. Like, so, like, from, you know, their search behemoths data, they just bought into ad tech and just use their search demand to own basically the open web. So, you know, Apple charge huge amounts of fees on apps that sit in their ecosystem. Their ecosystem is very much closed. They own the rails. That's the end of it, right? So they keep competitors out. They don't give them a chance to sort of like to get anywhere near them. And this act is about sort of like leveling the playing field, right? There's enough cash in those guys' banks to innovate, right? They don't need to sort of use their competitive advantage to kill, you know, to kill off any nascent company. And what you have in the US is effectively Hunger Games, right? It's like, you know, monopolies are encouraged to be sort of grown and owned. But all it does is concentrate wealth in a handful of few companies. What good is that for? Yeah. That's not capitalism. That's not capitalism, my view. It's like, it should be like, there should be like 10 companies in search. There should be more. There should be like four or five category companies. You know, AI should not be controlled by Microsoft and Google and maybe Facebook. You know, there should be more players. I think the DMA is just a weapon that allows the EU to keep, you know, markets open, right? Like, the Americans have done such a bad job that they've let Google basically run away with it. I mean, I think the DOJ is going to basically force Google to spin off businesses, but we have to be wary of what they're doing with one hand and you know, on what they're doing with one hand and then doing with the other. Like, you have to be kind of aware that there isn't a plan B, which there is. There's always a plan B at Google, right? They have been involved in some really nefarious activities over the last sort of, you know, 2 to 3 years, like colluding with the likes of Facebook and others to keep any sort of independent ad tech out. So I'm not, and it's not me attacking Google, but they're like a rabid dog, right? This is just a muzzle effect, right? You need to kind of keep these companies muzzled. Otherwise, they'll run riot. So I think you're right, Damien, around. I think the DMA is going to be a fairly successful piece of legislation for the EU, who just feel that antitrust is too slow, that it just gets screeches to a halt, and it takes too long to effect change, which then basically just kills any chance of companies coming up. I like the fact that you're able to kind of like use the DMA to kind of like start a legal process against these companies, which is good. I'm a fan of the DMA.
Yeah, and I think that we are at a moment in time where these companies have become so large and have so much resources that it's becoming very difficult to enforce the law. Right, when a 2 billion fine doesn't do anything, I think Google has already been fined 8 billion. I
mean, it's a rounding error.
It's for a lot of money, except if you have 100 billion in cash. In 100 billion in cash, well, then 8 billion. And so we are facing a world in which fines that a decade ago would have led you straight to bankruptcy have become a mere cost of doing business. So I think, you know, these are companies doing good stuff, good products. Yeah. I mean, I use Google products. I use,
so do I.
The only company I don't use is Apple, because I'm an Android.
As am I.
You know, I'm not negative about what they're doing, but I think that they've become a threat for the rule of law, if only because of their size and their ability not to comply with regulatory requirements. Something needs to be done, and it needs to be done in a sort of reasonable and effective way. The goal is not to kill these companies. It's not to prevent them from innovating. If you look at Microsoft is a company that has had lots of problems 20 years ago. Okay. Did it kill Microsoft? No, it didn't. They're actually much stronger today. They're more diversified. They have a much better balance between Windows and other products. It allowed companies like Google to do actually quite well, right? And I think we need to be able to place these companies in the same shoes as Microsoft 20 years ago, where the top management says, okay, you know, we've done a lot of things, some good, some bad, but now we need to take a stronger, to have a stronger focus on compliance. Okay, we're not above the law. Yeah. And they've not reached that point for some reason. But to some extent, you know, their reputation is being damaged. I mean, look, Apple, for example, has done extremely fine for a long time. They were, I wouldn't say they were the darlings of regulators, but they escaped all the problems that others have faced, but for a couple of, you know, relatively minor investigations. Now, everybody's looking at them, and they have managed to upset the developer community, which is not a good thing, right? Because they need the developer community on their side. And they've managed to upset large communities of developers, like, you know, even news publishers. They have apps, right? Not happy. Gamers, they've got apps, not happy. So, you know, you can only go so far. There's always a point where either because you're investigated everywhere and you're facing threatening lawsuits like Google, or because your reputation has taken a bad hit, you need to do something. And personally, that's my goal, is to force them to reach a point where someone in the board of directors will say, hey, you know, we've had a good run, but it's perhaps time to rethink the way we go about regulation. And I don't know if this is something we will achieve within the next few years, or maybe not, with respect to some companies, I don't know. But I want them to have their Microsoft moment, you know, where they say, okay, you know, that's fine, but we need to do better. And it won't kill them. It won't kill them. Because in a way, if you have to face more competition, you just need to be better at what you do. And so you may see companies that are actually have stronger fundamentals if they have to compete, right? And more diversified. And, you know, I don't see a bad future for them. And I don't want a bad future for them, actually. I have no personal qualms about these companies. I just want them to comply with the law. Is that complicated after all?
No, and it's a good wish to have, and yeah, I completely echo the sentiments that let's have these gatekeepers all have their Microsoft moment and lead to a wider, more diverse and innovative technological ecosystem the world over. But Damien, thanks ever so much for your time. It's been a wonderfully insightful discussion. Thanks for joining us. And Kieran, thanks as ever. And I'm sure you're going to be beating the drum on LinkedIn, telling everyone to submit their court cases at the earliest opportunity.
I'll be telling them to beat a track to see Damien and pick a friendly court somewhere and start putting it. Because I think it's necessary. And Damien's kind of outlined this, the reasons as to why he's doing it. He wants more of an equitable system and these companies are sort of like, comply with regulatory laws. So, you know, we'll put Damien's details up if there's any companies that want to chat to him. I'm sure they've already been on top of him on that, especially.
Yeah, I'm already a strong presence on LinkedIn, as you noticed.
Especially that YouTube gatekeeper thing, David. I think there's going to be a lot of people interested in that one.
100%. Okay.
Thank you so much. Lovely talking to you.